Good evening, everyone. It's 6:34. I declare the meeting open. We acknowledge the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians of this land, and we pay our respects to their elders past and present. Everyone here should be aware that there will be an audio recording of the General Council meeting, and it'll be made available on the City of Marion website, assuming it's working. I ask elected members if there's any anticipated conflict of interest. If not, then we go on to confirmation of the minutes. Would someone like to move that the minutes of the 28th June meeting be confirmed? Moved, Councillor Byram. Seconded, Councillor Pryor. All those in favour? The question is before or after the vote? Councillor Holt. Well, I didn't call the vote, so I'll take the question and then we'll take the vote. So, Councillor Holt?
Whether the letter was sent to the federal government about the Oaklands Crossing, about making sure that it's part of the national...
I think what you're referring to is the letter to the Premier asking that the state government recommend Oaklands Crossing to be listed on the Infrastructure Australia list of projects, and I have sent that letter.
Thank you very much.
So that was business arising. I'll just ask again for the vote in respect of confirmation of the minutes of that meeting. Thank you. That's carried unanimously. And I'll ask the same for a mover in respect of the special council meeting held on 12th of July. That dealt with the budget and a couple of other issues. Moved, Deputy Mayor Valescu, seconded Councillor Hutchinson. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you for that. The various reports from the Mayor, Deputy Mayor, elected member and Chief Executive, would somebody like to move that they be received? Councillor Telfer moved and Councillor Pryor seconded. Any questions? Then all those in favour, please raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. And now we can go straight to a deputation from Ms. Pauline Cleggett, the Treasurer of the Morphettville Weight Watchers Club, which meets at the Parcombe Community Hall. So please come forward, Pauline. And Ms. Dixon here will explain how to use the microphone. You have 5 minutes. That includes time for questions. So race through it if you like, and then that might leave some time for questions. Oh, sure. Time hasn't started yet.
Can I stand or sit?
It's your preference, whatever you're comfortable with.
I would prefer to stand.
Sure.
Okay. A little bit hot.
Over to you.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Pauline Cleggett, and I'm Treasurer of the Morphettville Weight Watchers Club. And behind here, we've got Mary Rose Green, who's our Secretary. And also, she was a member of the Hall Committee for the Parcombe Community Hall. I'd like to thank the Mayor, Mr. Chris Hanna, and the elected councillors for allowing me to speak very, very briefly, which is what I will do, about the Parcombe Community Hall. I thought I'd just start a little bit about, you know, just our particular group, which is the Weight Watchers group. We're a group of 40 ladies. The eldest is 92 and the youngest is 20, doing Bachelor of Engineering at Flinders. We have a lot of ladies that are in their 70s and their 80s. We have a lot of ladies that live by themselves. We have a lot of ladies whose husbands are deceased. When I gave up work and decided I really did need to lose a bit of weight, I thought, oh, I'll join the Weight Watchers. And when I went there, it was amazing. I went into this like a different world, this sort of very gentle world where people were caring and compassionate and really cared about their members. The members go, we're concerned about weight loss, we're concerned about healthy lifestyle, about healthy living. But a lot of the members go for the friendship as well. They've got support. A lot of them have got disabilities and they make sure they get to the group. We also raise money for charity and we like to give back to our members. A lot of the ladies, they live by themselves, they haven't got cars, they don't go very far. We organise excursions for them. This year we've been up to Harndorf, we've been to Murray Bridge and Monarta all in one. Last week we had Christmas in July where we took all the ladies out for a meal and we paid for it. These are fun things, these are fun activities. And so I think a lot of the groups are very much like that. If you look at the list of groups, which you probably will see in your report, and I'll try to think of them very, very quickly, you've got two churches there. You've got an exercise group. You've got line dancing. You've got Tai Chi. You have got residence and friendship group. You have got the Galleon Theatre. You've got community cabaret. You have got the Muslim ladies. You have got our group. You know, really, when you look at it, the groups, it covers a huge... These are social activities, these are cultural activities, these are physical activities, these are artistic and creative activities. There are a lot of old people that use, or elderly people that use, the Park Holme Community Centre. On your website, you said that the Marion Council has more people over 75 than any other council in Adelaide. So you could expect that. But you've got to think, is it 3 minutes? You have got to think that a lot of these older people, they're running these groups. They're the treasurer, the presidents, they're organising the activity. These are really, really good things. Now, if you've got the oldest people using this facility, in 10 to 15 years' time, you will have the youngest people who will be looking around for facilities. The hall's in really good condition. It's very flexible. You could have lots of things there for youth. You could have, you know, you could have theatre, youth theatre, you could have calisthenics, you could have youth orchestra, you could have ballet. We have a lot of disabled people that use the group. There's a ramp there. They get to their exercise classes on their gophers. They make sure they get there. We have the Muslim ladies. They're after us. They come in, they do cooking. They do exercise. They said in the user group workshop that we had, that was organised as part of the consultative process, they said the Park Holme Hall is a home away from home. This is the first port of call for many new migrants. They see us through all facets of their life. They give them so much support when they're pregnant, child rearing, all those type of things. Thanks. You know, when you look at it, it's a little hall in a suburban area. I think that the Marion Council should really, really be congratulated on what it has achieved here. I think it is outstanding. I haven't been associated with many groups and clubs, but I couldn't believe what they've done here. The hall embodies the core community values that the Marion Council puts out. You know, it provides social cohesion for a lot of adult residents, for the disabled, for the elderly, for our new Australians that are coming, the migrants. It provides a venue to alleviate social isolation. Social isolation is a really huge problem for elderly people who live by themselves. The hall is a lot of things. It does activities that are fun, that are interesting. I know that one of the problems has been the hall management committee, but I really feel that the user groups really want to work with the Marion Council to overcome this, and I'm sure that it can be overcome. And I feel that the hall is really a little treasure for the Marion Council and probably not something that should be put on a disposal. It's really enhanced the lives of the users of the hall. I know it has enhanced my life and it will enhance future lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Pauline. You might have noticed from the alarm bell that the 5 minutes was just up.
Thank you very much for listening. And giving us the opportunity to put forward our case. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And if the members are inclined to do it, we'll get to the Park Holme Hall issue fairly soon. We'll just get through a couple of routine matters. There are no petitions or workshop items. Could I have someone to move on block the confirmation of the minutes of the People and Culture meeting and the Infrastructure Committee meetings held on 5th of July? It won't stop people asking questions about either of them. Councillor Byam has moved. Seconded Councillor Hutchinson. Did anyone have any questions or comments? Then I put that motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Then in terms of the remaining items on the agenda, you'll notice that at page 93 you've got the Parkholm Community Hall issue in the agenda. Are the members happy if we move that to address that item now? So with the leave of the meeting, that can be placed as the next item on the agenda. We don't need a motion. We'll just deal with it since I have been granted leave of the meeting, and that can be noted. So, you wanted to move, Councillor Vlescu? Yes, go. I have recognised Councillor Vlescu. You certainly will have the opportunity to ask questions irrespective of contribution to the debate, but I'll invite Councillor Vlescu to move the motion and then I'll come back to Councillor Crossland.
I'd like to move the motion as is, but I guess I'd like to leave the option open for if there is an external group that can actually come into the venue and run it without displacing the current users. So is that something that...
I can help you with that, Councillor Vlescu, because in discussions during the week... staff have incorporated a couple of additional words compared to what was in the draft agenda. So you'll see there in the recommendation number one, it talks about either establishing another committee or tenancy arrangements to take over the management of the hall. So it just leaves it open that if there was a tenant, and I'm aware of this as a bare possibility, but if there was a tenant who could manage the hall, that would be of benefit to the user groups and the hall's operations in every respect, then it might be another option. So if you moved as printed, it's not closing off that option, if that answers your question.
Oh, okay. All right, that's fine. Just, okay. And I'd move that only, I hadn't been made aware that that was a possibility. And I guess if there's less requirements for the user groups in what they do on top of what they provide for their members, that's why I was looking at that. I wouldn't want it to displace the members. I wouldn't want the members that feel that, you know, that place is so significant to them due to its location and what it offers. I wouldn't want them in any way to feel like that they are being pushed out. And I wouldn't be supporting anything that comes to us that had that. I think that Pauline quite eloquently described the importance it has for the individuals. And I have to say, through this process, it's opened up my eyes. I had only a brief snapshot of the use through my involvement, sort of sometimes attending the committee meetings. And I think we've got the opportunity also to call on members of the committee that wish to come back, and also new people to be part of it, to sort of shape the direction of it. But I think the location, as far as the transport, is deemed to be quite important, and the access, also the access to a lot of the houses where there are people on their own, there are people older, there are people in the lower socioeconomic areas. Down that street, there's a whole lot of units. You know, there's people there that have a fair degree of disabilities as well, so it's good that it's something that they can use. We've recently spent money to upgrade it, to make it accessible within, I think, the last 5 years. I guess based on the information provided through the consultation, I think the way to go is to move as is.
Well, just to clarify one thing, Councillor Vlescu, staff have actually put up two forms of wording on the screen. When it came to us earlier, the word consultation was used in recommendation three, but staff are now saying that engagement would be more appropriate in line with the community engagement policy, which we're going to deal with later this meeting. So can I take it that you're moving... Well, you know, this is...
It's fine.
Yeah.
And as I said, like, you know, any tenancy agreement would come to us and we'd see the details, and as I said, I'd be supporting something that doesn't push people out in any way.
Sure. So it's you're moving, as we now see on the screen. It's a bit of a technicality in a way, but engagement rather than consultation. So it's been moved. At this stage, I'll take a seconder. I'm conscious there might be questions. Councillor Hull, you're seconding? Yes, would you like to speak?
Mr. Mayor, this council has embarked on a process of assessing just about everything, even subscriptions to magazines and different entities, environmental groups and sports groups, whatever. But this particular hall is just one of those that we've looked at. And I was happy to put it out there. I don't think there should be sacred cows. We even dealt with the most sensitive of issues of late, being the Aboriginal Interpretive Centre. We've looked at that and sent that on a new direction. Hopefully it would be a better outcome for us and the Aboriginal community. Now, this whole has been looked at, and it is interesting that in the report it talks about its structural capacity, that it's in reasonable nick. That's been pointed out by the Speaker. I have a particular soft spot for the hall. I was chair of that committee for a number of years and was there with a major redevelopment of the site. The ante room was opened by Mayor Colin Haynes when I was chair, and we put air conditioning in. We lifted the prohibition of alcohol in the hall and allowed the ability for some income to come in. And there's peaks and troughs in these halls. It's gone through a trough. And hopefully this assessment of the hall and the reaction from the community is an opportunity for we start to pull out of the trough and go into the peak and see a new life of interest in the hall. It hasn't done any harm at all. It's done the hall probably more good than harm. And we have looked at other halls, as you know, members, and it's quite a different outcome. In fact, one is nearing sale, and for good reason. And we're also embarking on a building program with the Edwardstown Sporting Complex, Mitchell Park, hopefully, where the amenity for the community will even be better than what's been on offer over many years. Now, this particular hall is a converted theatre. You can see that from the inside. It's served us well, and it's probably got a lot more years in it yet. So, I take it on board, Mr. Mayor, from the community. We've heard them. There's been a series of messenger newspaper articles about the hall, and rightly so. The community have reacted to our assessment, and this is the appropriate motion to go forward with.
And now I'll hear some questions. I know, Councillor Crossland, you had some questions to ask.
The first question is, I'm really disappointed with the report. It's completely skewed. The first question is, why, when we put the motion forward, which was supposed to be to get a report considering all options, and members will remember we took out the word disposal because we were assured that that wasn't necessary to go in there, because the report would be give us all the options available and consider all the angles. This report, to my mind, is completely lacking in full options for relocating the groups in there, and there seems to be no consideration of the disposal option. I'd like, first of all, to ask why that's not being presented.
Ms. Dixon.
Through the Chair, in terms of the resolution passed by Council in March, it was to consider the future options. Part of that, so in the report, it contains assessment of the condition of the hall, in terms of the, you know, where it is in terms of the life of the hall, the useful life remaining. Part of that site investigation is also community feedback, so there was a community engagement process undertaken, which really kept it open in terms of what the current users of the hall were seeing as what they valued in the hall and how they could see it was improved as well. So staff have analysed those results. What they've presented here is a recommendation in terms of the future use of this asset for council's consideration tonight. So that's a recommendation that, in terms of the analysis outline that's been put forward to council.
Right, Councillor Crossan, keep going.
Yeah, I think that completely didn't answer my question, but I'm not going to get an answer, so I'll move on. The next question is, on Appendix 2, we've got a very small list of alternative locations. Can you tell me the parameters of why we got such a small list? I'm guessing they're like one street away. What was the parameters for that list?
Ms Dixon?
Through the Chair, I'm just getting Ms Hampton to come up, who was involved in that analysis of other sites.
Areas we went like a walking distance, like what we believe was an appropriate distance for people to travel to an alternative site. So we had a look at that.
And Ms Hampton, can you tell me what is the appropriate distance for all of our residents to have for a community hall?
We have, the council has not set a limit on that.
What was the limit that you set on this occasion? Just so I've got it for the record.
I'd have to get back to you on that one, because the community development team helped with that assessment.
The point I'm making is a search on our own website.
Councillor Crossan, I mean, use your questions up, and then, of course, you'll have an opportunity to speak in debate. Are there any more questions?
Question would be is, all right, then I'll ask to rephrase it slightly differently, would 4 minutes be too far away for people to walk?
I think that's an individual, as we heard, there are a lot of older people that use that site. So 4 minutes for a healthy, fit person is not far. For someone who has a walking frame, it may be quite some distance for them.
Oh, that's fine. So 4 minutes is too far.
Right. So, Councillor Crossland, is that it for questions? I mean, you'll still have a chance to speak in the debate, but were there any other questions then... Well, Councillor Crossland, would you like to go ahead?
I'd like to move a deferment, because I don't believe this is a fair and transparent report. On our own website, we have lots of different halls in very close proximity to Park Home. So we've even got all the details, the capacity, everything. They don't appear on Appendix 2. I'm not sure why that is. Maybe the researcher wasn't very good. There's a scout hall which is only two streets away. That doesn't appear on the report. There are another three churches not that far away in my view. They're not on the report. It's very difficult to make a decision when you've got a report which is clearly geared to one end solution.
Thank you. That is the motion to defer to a particular date?
Until staff think they can do the research properly.
No, I think we might need something more definite. Right, we've got two meetings in August, so second meeting in August. Is that seconded? Seconded Councillor Kerry. All those in favour? All those against? Oh, hang on, we've got arms going up like corn waving in the wind. I'll just need you to, if you are in favour of deferring to the second meeting in August, please raise your hand and keep it up. Please put your hands down. If you're against the deferral, please raise your hand. I declare the procedural motion carried, so we'll come back on the second meeting in August in relation to that, and I simply invite Councillor Crossland and any others to work with staff so that the report reflects what you want to get out of it for the meeting. So we move on to The business plan consideration, page 57. That we want to defer. Right. Now, and thank you, members of the Weight Watchers. So, as you've heard, we'll deal with that. We'll just give you the date for that council meeting in August. The 23rd of August, we're going to debate it again. So you're very welcome to come back on that occasion. But don't feel you have to stay for the rest of the meeting. We've got a few hours to go. Members, I've been advised by staff that some of the terminology in the business plan item is actually dependent upon the passage of the item which is on page 92, the strategic plan item. So it simply makes sense to deal with the business plan after the strategic plan. So if I have leave of the meeting, then that item will be deferred, business plan item will be deferred until after the strategic plan item. There being no dissent, leave is granted, so we'll do that. And that brings us to the Work Health and Safety monthly report. So I think this is our first Work Health and Safety report. It's an excellent innovation to have a monthly report on our safety statistics, which don't compare terribly favourably to other councils, but the very fact of publishing them every month is surely going to help drive towards improved safety practices, and that's what we want to do. So you'll see on page 84 of your agenda, I think this is one of those information reports which invites questions, and then it might be dispatched fairly quickly once people have considered the content. So does anyone have any questions about the content? No, Councillor Hull?
Well, look, I agree with you, Mr. Mayor, that this is a good new intervention by the administration to provide this information to us. If this was a business, and in many ways it is, the directors of that business would be keeping a close eye on this. This is a big issue for businesses.
Sorry, Councillor Hull, you're moving the motion as recommended.
Yeah,
yes, thank you.
It is a big issue for businesses, and I really think that that same business acumen should carry over to us, and we keep an eye on this. The Audit Committee, I understand, has already looked at this and raised concerns about the trends. And basically, it is an inherent expectation of the community that we keep an eye on. And I welcome this, and it's something that has concerned me for a while, that it was pretty much considered none of our business in the past, that you know, staff matters are not issues for elected members. But when it's actually matters relating to staff that have a price tag attached, particularly when we are exceeding the group trend, then I think it's very much an issue for us, and hopefully this would be part of our reporting systems for going forward. So, given that it is now part of our scope, I guess the mission for the administration is to actually bring the trend in keeping with the group trend. So that's the task at hand.
Thank you. Well, it forms part of the organisational KPIs as well, and they've been tightened up. It might be added this year. Is that seconded? Seconded, Councillor Byram. Any comment? Is there a need for any further comment? Councillor Garr?
Yes, Your Worship, in the process of discussing this at Audit and Finance, I brought up the point that I felt that mental injury was a very much overlooked aspect of the workplace, particularly in the Australian community, and that I would very much like to see, as part of the overall process, that preventative but also curative measures be brought into place for that purpose. There's not much more to say about it, except that if it's something that can bring premiers down and the best of sportsmen down, it's something that can bring anybody down. And I think it is probably moving up on the physical injury level as far as its frequency or incidence in the workplace is concerned. So I just leave that as a comment for management to take on board. I don't think it's something that requires a motion down the track.
I'm confident they will. I appreciate your comments, Councillor Gard. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Now we turn to page 87 of the agenda. Wi-Fi access in council-owned community buildings. It's another report that's primarily for information. Does anyone have any questions? No? Councillor Velescu to move.
Look, I do want to move it, but I want us to actually look at how we can increase the access to other buildings. The depots, pretty much for our community, is useless as far as Wi-Fi access, because no one's going to hang out in front of the depot. This is something we should be looking to provide in our community centres, and I'd like us to look at the options of how we can do it, and it could be over time. Just really noting. So that's what I want.
So you're formulating an extension of that existing recommended motion, are you?
Yep.
So something like, did you have our neighbourhood centres in mind, or is it broader than that?
It's pretty much the neighbourhood centres, yeah, things like that. So I think Trott Park Community Centre should be one of those that has it. Some of the other community centres don't know, so I think, yeah.
Just while we're in the fluid space of determining exactly what your motion is, and I invite you to write it down, which is always good practice, I'll invite Mr. Mifsud to comment.
Thank you, through the Chair. I think certainly having the opportunity to provide the best viable and cost-effective way to extend the network for the community is certainly a very, very good aspiration. We've got four community centres. Three of them already have Wi-Fi access. The only one that doesn't, as you correctly pointed out, Councillor Velescu, is Trott Park. The dilemma we have there, and whilst we can certainly investigate further if members wish us to, is we would actually have to bring in directional boring to get access to linkages with the existing optic fibre cables that go through to Cove Civic Centre, for example, to be able to get that access. So whilst that is physically possible, there would be a substantial cost involved in doing that. But the other three community centres are already connected, as are the three libraries.
Well, that gives a question to the Chair before we go any further, because I love to have visual representations of these things, and I notice on page 89 of the agenda there's a diagram. It mentions that Mitchell Park Neighbourhood Centre has public Wi-Fi access, and that is mentioned in the body of the report. It confirms that Trott Park Neighbourhood Centre doesn't, but it doesn't say anything about Glandore, for example. So why is that? Oh, hang on, Glandore's up there. No, it says that it doesn't have Wi-Fi.
Yeah, my apologies. The two that do are Cowinder and Mitchell Park, so my apologies. Glandore currently doesn't have Wi-Fi access.
Right, okay. So you've talked about, Mr. Mifsud, you've talked about financial costs that you're aware of to include Trott Park. Do you know about Glandore, whether there are any particular cost implications?
Mayor Hannah, there would be cost implications. I don't know what that would be off the top of my head, but I'm more than happy to take that query on notice for members if you so wish.
Okay, Councillor Velescu, have you got something clear?
Motion council engage with users of community centres, obviously within the City of Marion, to increase Wi-Fi access as soon as practical.
Would you consider a motion to explore first and get
some costing. Because it also opens up the opportunity, you know, if there's other levels of government that think that digital engagement is important, there's an opportunity for grant funding as well.
Yeah. So just to help you with the wording, so if it was to the council, not the word to, but just examine options to increase... well, you might... Did you have... And what else was it, councillor, or just...
Access to basically all our community centres or our major community centres.
Yes, we need to be clear because neighbourhood centres are talked about, community centres. Well, let's make sure that staff understand it.
I guess you've also got, you know, some of the other... I'd say neighbourhood centre because then that is a bit of a grey area as far as whether you want to include sports centres as well and places like that eventually. But I think the community centres is where people sit and do some of that learning. And
the neighbourhood centres?
I'd say neighbourhood centres at this point.
So at this stage, examine options to increase Wi-Fi access to all of the neighbourhood centres. And have a report brought back by?
Yes, fine.
By December 2016. Have a report brought back to council by December 2016. And it's brought with an R. Thank you. Okay, so we've got a motion. Sorry, Councillor Crossland, I'm just going to test if that is seconded. It's seconded, Councillor Hull, come back to you. Councillor Crossland has a question.
Yes, just a question for Mr. Misford. So at the moment I'm assuming our Wi-Fi is all optic and it's on our network, is that correct?
Mr. Misford.
Through the chair, yes, so we've got optic fibre cables that run through to Cove Civic Centre and to all the other sites, that's correct.
So just as an option, and I'm not sure there may be a reason why we wouldn't consider it. I know Halley Cove, I'm not sure about Trott Park, has had NBN installed, but through someone like Telstra, you can now have a modem which is called Telstra Air, and it's free Wi-Fi for everybody, even if you install it at home. So I just wondered if optic is going to cost hundreds of thousands, would a cheaper option be to just have an NBN installation?
Mr. Wilson,
through the chair, excellent point, and I'll make sure that we take that into consideration and explore it thoroughly when we bring back that report to council later on this year. Thank you.
And just to add to that, when I was at an event recently with Mayor Patterson of Holdfast Bay Council, he was making the point that they're installing these little, and I think they are Telstra Air Wi-Fi kiosks, for example, in Mosley Square, so you can just sit there on a bench and go for it. That's right, other points on the coastal strip. So, the motion is good, it's been seconded, we've given some ideas for staff to explore. Councillor Hull, did you wish to speak?
Thank you. You've already touched on some things I was going to say, Mr. Mayor, about the Holdfast Bay experience with Telstra. I think we as a council have got to get with it. The younger community seems to have an appetite that's much more than the older community. And the irony is that we dealt tonight with a hall that has had some usage issues. And I would suggest that the usage of our halls could benefit from this if we actually provided the amenity of Wi-Fi. You may get younger people going there for whatever reason in greater numbers than we currently see. Members, we've had many a presentation about... In fact, this council used to be called the Smart City. We had a little logo. But we never really walked the talk. We never lived up to the rhetoric. And it disappoints me that we're still struggling with this. And I congratulate the Honourable Member for continually bringing this up. He was the one who instigated this report, and I'm happy to support this venture. We probably could take a leaf out of some other councils' books about the relationship with NBN. We have got NBN in the city of Marion. It's mostly along, from what I understand, along the eastern part of the city. And we wonder why we've got vast areas of the city, particularly where there is NBN, with no Wi-Fi coverage. The city of Adelaide, I think, is almost entirely Wi-Fi now. And I really think that we're dragging the chain with this. And I congratulate Jason for bringing this up. It's something that he's been pushing, and I really think that the addition to the motion was simply note the report, is valid and in the interest of the city.
Thank you, Councillor Hull. Now, I remind you that I've told you not to refer to other members in the course of debate, but I suppose when you're heaping praise on them, I could be lenient about that. Is there anyone speaking against the motion? No. Well, Councillor Lescu, I'm still going to invite to close the debate.
Thank you. I think, especially in the area of people that may not be that well off, I think access to Wi-Fi can help some of the issues related to limited data and bill shock. I think also if you have a look outside our libraries, quite often when they're closed, you'll see people out the front there with their laptops taking advantage of the free Wi-Fi that's provided. I think we do have the option of looking at the optical options, even fibre from optical fibre from the node to the community centre. That'll be a very long acronym, but that's something we can do. And I think whilst we don't have the same density of population as Adelaide, I think our priorities need to be where people are. So, you know, places like Tonsley, you'd think, that have a lot of Wi-Fi access, where people go, our community centres. I guess the destination places, without sort of sounding cliche, is where you'd want to have this. So hopefully we can look into it. And I look forward to the report. And I guess it'd be great if we can have a bit of an update, even via email, of the things that include it. Because if we do have ideas, it's probably better to add those to the process as opposed to the next meeting going, why didn't you think of this? Why didn't you think of that? So that'd be much appreciated. Thank you very much.
Well, that's right. And it's incumbent upon all elected members, when they have ideas about how to improve things after we've had a council debate, or even when we get a draft agenda, to give those ideas to staff. Better to do it now, do it this week, rather than wait till December and wait till the actual meeting. You know what I mean? It's more effective for you to get your ideas across if you feed them in earlier. But a point well made. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Page 90. Special feature tonight with a new and improved product for line marking. I wondered why this came up to council, and then I noted that it was actually a motion of council in September 2014.
And it's not red tape either.
No, apparently not. I haven't seen any red tape on the roads. We're trying to reduce red tape. Someone to move? Councillor Hull, is that seconded? Councillor Telfer, no need for any discussion. Fantastic report, great product. All those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously, thank you. You managed to get that one over the line, Tony. Well done. Sorry, just a side comment to the Chief Executive. On page 92, we're now dealing with the name of the what still is for the moment, the strategic plan towards 2040. Move a question, Councillor Hull.
If we actually called it towards 2036, would that be considered in order?
Well, I would say there's not a ring to
there's,
it.
There's only a couple of people that know what I'm talking about, obviously, but
maybe explain at the end of the meeting around midnight. Mm. Councillor Hutchinson to move. Is that seconded? Councillor Pryor. Any other comments? Councillor Gard.
Yes, I think there's two issues with the motion. One is that where there's a query as to whether it's a community vision or it's a strategic plan or vision, and I think it needs to be properly named in that respect. But I just wonder, from the point of view of future communication, it's sort of Councillor Hull just hinted at this, but community vision is a very generic term and it doesn't have a lot of perspective, and I would have thought that going with something like community vision to 2040 would be the best of all things. You can have a vision for a particular period of time after which you refresh that vision, in the same sense that you can have a plan for that particular scope of time. So I just put that up to members to consider. It's really just a communication, potential communication issue that I'm predicting.
Thank you, Councillor Gard. There's no other debate. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried by majority. Thank you. Now, the next item which was on the agenda was the community hall, but you will recall that we agreed to put the business plan after this item. So back to page 57, snakes and ladders, back to page 57 of your agenda, and you'll see there are a couple of options. I might invite Ms. Harvey to come to the front of the chamber in case there are questions, any explaining to do. One, I suppose one curiosity, or maybe something to highlight, is that the terms in the report as drafted, we've got valuing nature and values nature, metamorphosing depending on where it's used. So when it's used by itself, it's valuing nature, but when expressed in the community vision, it's expressed as values nature because of the sentence, we want a community that is. Now the question is, a community that is values nature, I'm not sure if that works, but perhaps just on that point, Ms. Harvey, can you talk us through that?
Yes, thank you, through the Chair. As members will recall, at the forum last week, there was a discussion to change the term biophilic to valuing nature, which we'll see is through the plan. In the area around community vision, in staff's first reading of that sentence, it was felt that valuing nature didn't quite work, but I think in retrospect, in reading it again, I would have to say that valuing nature would be definitely the terminology that should be used. So we would make that change before it goes out to community consultation.
Well, it depends on if that's picked up in the motion moved by members, I suppose. Did members have any questions before we get into moving? Councillor Hull, question?
Yeah, we just dealt with Wi-Fi around the city, and there is a section in this plan called Connected, which pretty much sums up what we debated a few moments ago. And the irony is that in the goals, there's little, if no, reference to that endeavour. Is it too late to actually embed digital technology in bolder terms as a means for people being connected? Because I think it is a growing tool for communities, individuals to communicate with each other and be exactly that, connected.
Councillor Hull, two points I'd make before asking Ms. Harvey to comment. First of all, in the community vision, we do talk about harnessing technology to enable people to access services and facilities. Secondly, a new thing in this
strategic document is in the purpose or vision, we've got the word smartly, so that should be guiding what we do. It's true that we're probably not explicit in the goals for the next 3 years to spell out the use of technology to the extent that you're talking about.
Bottom of 78, Mr. Mayor, is about the closest I can see. That
well, 78 is the spot, yeah, and that's where we talk about harnessing technologies. I mean, Councillor Hull, you know what? For the sake of getting this through the meeting, I'd almost be inclined to say, let's take this piece of work. It's been kicked around in various draft forms a number of times, but certainly if you could come up with some wording on the spot that appeals to the group, it's certainly not too late. But, you know, I think overall, talking not just this meeting, but overall we're trying in meetings to have less wordsmithing on the spot for the sake of better governance. But really, I don't want to discourage you. If you can come up with some wording that better encapsulates that aspiration of working smartly and using technology to achieve our vision, then please do it. You'll have a chance. Now, all you've done is asked a question at this stage, so I'll come back to you. I've got some other questions. Councillor Telfer. Oh, sorry, Sorry, Councillor Telfer, I beg your pardon. I was going to ask Ms Harvey if she wanted to comment on that.
Thank you, through the Chair. I guess the only other thing that I would bring to the attention of members is one of the goals under Connected does talk to a city that supports equitable access to diverse information sources and reliable digital technologies. So there is some explicit reference to digital technologies. Certainly things can be added.
Thank you. Councillor Telfer?
My most pressing concern, seeing I've missed the debate that's been going on this, is on page 78, support the rail expansion from Tonsley to Flinders Medical in the University Precinct. I am very strong on getting something in there about the railway stations. They are in our area. They are not funded by the state government. We have to do everything we can to make sure that we turn up appropriate railway stations. We're not so worried about what happens across the border up the hill, but we need those railway stations and they need to be paid for by the state government. And so supporting the rail expansion and the new railway stations or working towards the new railway stations is an imperative for me.
I must say, as I understand it from the briefings from state government, it is part of the rail line extension that there would of course be a terminus at around the Flinders University, Flinders Medical Centre space, but there would be a new railway station between the current Clovelly Park and Tonsley stations. The Tonsley station itself will have to go because of the crossover of Sturt Road and the curve. That's my understanding, but somebody else on top of that managers? Somebody want to... That's right, there's a gradient, obviously, to take it up the hill.
But my point is that there's a big difference between the $85 million that's out there for the actual line. But there's no commitment, no budgeting, nothing I've heard about to do with the stations. And all I think, right, as a council, we need to be working on that, and I will perhaps bring forward motion on notice to that end if it doesn't fit in here.
Well, as I say, as far as I know, the new station, which would replace the current Clovelly Park and Tonsley, and it would be adjacent, close to adjacent to the proposed new residential zone within the Tonsley precinct. According to initial briefings at least, that station is included in the extension. So it's not just railroad track, it's everything that goes with it. So, Mr. Mip, is saying is confirming that, but Mr. Mifsud, can you just expand on that?
No, look, sorry members, I can't expand any further, but what Mayor Hannah has summarised for you is accurate and certainly correct in terms of briefings we've previously received on a number of occasions through the workings that we're doing with the Tonsley Party groups.
Councillor Telfer, I mean, I would be 100% with you, I'm sure everybody on council would be, if there was any lack of placement of a station in the Tonsley area. It certainly defies belief to me that there would not be a station included if the rail line is to be extended over Sturt Road. So I suppose what I'm suggesting is we could leave it at that, but be part of a campaign, and indeed we will surely be consulted. We will make sure we are advocates for a good service when that project goes ahead. But does that comfort you at the moment?
Well, I can deal with it as we go along with notices of motion to highlight that. One of the other issues that is important to me that I don't see there is the whole issue of resolving street car parking. It would go in page 76. It's about urban planning, but I'm very aware around Sturt, Seacombe Gardens, Oaklands Park, the whole issue of car parking, street car parking, created by the whole form and density. Now, that may be hidden in the whole issue of urban form and north-south corridor and so on, but it's something that I'll be looking out for, and if it's not at this level, then we can take it up perhaps at ward levels.
I was thinking that it might be on page 68, although I can't see anything that specific. But Ms. Harvey, can you help us with that? Where that sort of, you know, streetscaping, traffic, amenity sort of issue would come into it?
Yes, thank you, through the Chair. There's a number of goals in here that speak to specific areas, you know, the Marion Historic Village transformation, looking at better managing traffic flow, and as you mentioned, Councillor Telfer, the 30-year plan and precinct developments, although there's not a specific standalone goal that looks at managing car parking across the city as such, as we tend to speak about those things on a case-by-case or an area-by-area basis.
Something that we will have to work on, and again it may be at that lower level and not actually intertwined into the actual words that are here.
I note that in the middle of page 68 there's review housing zones. I mean, that's really the place to attack the street parking issue. Mm-hmm. It's in the formula allocating car parking per new allotment or new residence. Mm-hmm. And
the other thing that I looked for was the whole issue of assisting residents in the just resolution of toxic contamination issues, and that's not there, and maybe it's not what we have to do because it's state government has to do something to alleviate Mitchell Park, Clovelly Park, Edwardstown, Glengowrie, those places that are having toxic contamination issues. It seems that it may be, again, taken up in another forum, but there may be some opportunity to say that we are looking for some to advocate and support, not do it all ourselves.
Well, I'm I'm in your hands, members. I'm wondering, we've got a few suggestions there. I'm not saying they're bad suggestions, but one option would be to defer this to the next meeting and sort of give ourselves an absolute deadline that we will have to Ms. Harvey in writing any suggestions for changes, and then we can deal with them in an orderly manner. But if we're going to take two or three or four little changes here and there through the document tonight, I'm a bit concerned that we won't do it well by doing it on the spot. So I'm just putting that out there. Hutchinson?
Yeah, I think we need to think about what level this document's aimed at and put it into context. I mean, if we could all bring up some local level area issues in there. I'll see what the others say, because if we want to go down that path, I think we do need to defer it.
Well, can I, let's just jump outside standing orders for a moment. I'm not going to bother with a motion, but, or maybe we should, maybe someone should vote to defer, or move to defer, and we'll just test it, whether you want to do that or whether you want to deal with it tonight. Councillor Byron?
Thank you, Worship. This has to go out to public consultation. Isn't there the chance of us still making those minor amendments when it comes back? So can't we still have it go to public consultation and then do these other changes?
That's a brilliant thought. Most helpful. So we could actually approve this and turn ourselves into members of the public and come up with suggestions in the meantime before it comes back for final consultation. There's no problem with that, Ms. Harvey, is there?
No, not at all.
Okay. So, Councillor Crossland? Moving.
Just move it, yeah.
As recommended.
Which one are we going for?
But
which wording is it again?
So, on page 66, are you having valuing nature rather than values nature?
Let's leave it as valuing.
Yes, valuing. And do you prefer mission or purpose?
Purpose.
You're a purpose man. Oh, that's bloody controversial. But sorry, not that I should comment in the debate. But that's moved. Did you wish to speak to the motion?
Oh, thank you.
So that's seconded. Councillor Gard, did you wish to speak? Very well. Anyone speaking a question?
Any reference to the word biophilic be referred to the Marion Historical Society? Because it's part of the history now of Marion. Future generations are going to ask the question, Mr. Mayor, what happened to biophilia?
We could maybe pass it on to some former staff who would be well versed in it, but I'm not sure. So, is anyone speaking against amending, doing whatever? No? Then I put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that is carried by majority. Thank you. So, members, we're jumping forward in the agenda massively now to page 117, the draft policy for community engagement. Fire away.
As is, Your Worship.
Is that seconded? Councillor Byram, anyone wish to speak? If not, then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. And I think that was a classic example where a certain amount of work and consultation was done before the meeting, and it really helps things go through smoothly. So thank you to staff who worked with elected members on that. Page 121, Business Continuity Management. Away you go. one of these things that has to be done. I'm sure it's in the risk management or handbook. If you do an MBA on risk, this is one of the things you have to do. So, Councillor Telfer.
Move as per the recommendation.
Councillor
Hunt.
Yes.
Page 121, the first one.
The first one, which incorporates... hang on a minute. I don't think it's an option, is it? But we're doing both. So it's not an option. Staff are suggesting we do one and two, and they can probably be done together.
Well, I'll so do. Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Councillor Telfer. That's seconded, Councillor Hutchinson. Any questions or comments? Then Councillor Gard.
Your Worship, just on the matter of urgency impact, normally with operations you have three or four absolutely vital areas. Now, I think it has been pretty well illustrated in here as to what they might be.
Save the elected members first. That's critical.
Yes, exactly. Tonight even. But I'm just wondering whether there has been a planning exercise on how that might be done in the event of some sort of incident. In other words, save the important ones first. Yes.
Well, would staff... Ms. McKenzie would like to answer that.
Through the Chair, the organisation has just gone through an exercise at the moment where we are identifying our critical business functions. We've had, I think, 26 workshops across the organisation. We're in the process now of collating that data and bringing it back. It'll come back through the Finance and Audit Committee in the first instance.
All right. Question, Councillor Hope.
If this is approved tonight, and the LGA motion is deferred, could the business continuity model be applied to the LGA situation we have at hand?
I'm not sure that's what it's for, but I'll ask staff to come in. A rhetorical one, Councillor Hull? I suppose, to take your question literally, termination of membership with the LGA will not cause business operations to cease. However, some will indeed have an impact, and that's the subject of the report that's coming to Council.
I'm glad to hear that, but I guess the inherent message that I was trying to dispatch was that the preventative factor, this is about prevention, and anticipation and action, and I'm not sure we actually received that in recent times, Mr. Mayor.
Right, more comment than question. We'll take that as rhetorical. If there are no more comments, then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that is carried by majority. Thank you, members. We're on to page 151 of the agenda. Plimpton Sports and Recreation Club. Landlord's approval for installation of electronic scoreboard. Councillor Blescu to move.
I'd like to support this. I'd also like to once again congratulate this club for what they've done in being able to manoeuvre themselves to get some external grant funding. They are probably one of the few, I think we can count them on one hand, that have been able to take advantage of the partnership program, that perhaps have had the capacity and time on top of running the club for their members, that have been able to get external funding. I'd like to see other clubs being given that same assistance to do it. So in this case, they've been able to access money for a scoreboard, their own money and external money. But I think really got to learn from them. But I think the program, and we're going to be a bit broader, Your Worship, but I think the partnership program was probably assumed all clubs would be like this. but they're, unfortunately they're not, just because of circumstance. So I'd like, you know, before the end of this term to see many more clubs come into the same situation. I hope that as elected members and staff we can support them. So, you know, whilst this is great and it's a really positive thing, it'll help them, I think we need to also see that other clubs have are put in a similar situation. And just a bit of background, they've had hundreds of thousands of dollars spent on that club in the last sort of 6 years. They've got money from the AFL, they've got partnership funding, they've brought forward money for disability provisions in that area, so when they put in a new toilet, new change rooms, they're in a very good place, and part of that is the Star program, I think it is. So I guess the elected members aren't aware of it. That's a program, a sports program, where on governance and support, and the members of the board can actually get skills in certain area, and it puts you in a better place for getting grants. But I also do want to acknowledge that all the other work that the clubs do as well, because you've got other clubs that may not be getting the grants or not being in that position, but they do a lot, and the clubs do a lot for our communities. So I know it's a bit broad. Thank you, Your Worship, for not sort of cutting me off, but I think it's very important that more of these come up.
Before turning to a seconder, I just respond to your comments with some useful information. Council has advertised, and applications have closed and been received for a new position. For someone who would assist the clubs around our city to help with finance, with governance and business analysis, and therefore raise more clubs to that sort of high-level functioning where they would be able to make money, source money and apply to us for money for useful projects. So maybe your wishes will come to fruition once we have selected that new person. Now, looking for a seconder, I know Councillor Appleby's very keen point of question, I think that is. Yeah, far away.
Question. This funding is not from the Community Partnership Fund, it's actually from Holden. It's not part of a council application for funding.
Okay. Well, you could have included that in the debate, but I think Councillor Appleby was really keen to second this one.
Extremely keen, Your Worship.
Thank you.
I don't think anything more needs to be said than the club's paying for the scoreboard itself, and it's a pretty simple, straightforward motion.
Appreciate your concern.
We received an email today about a scoreboard being put out the front here, electronic scoreboard. So as the motions are passed and seconded, they're going to flash up outside. Is that how it's going to work, Mr. Lawrence?
Council Hull, you've been away for about, what, 2 or 3 weeks? I've forgotten what humour was like. Any other speakers in the debate? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Okay, that's carried unanimously. Thank you. So on to page 159 of the agenda, access to legal advice for elected members. Oh, that sounds interesting. Councillor, it's a staff report, so who would like to move? Councillor Kerry.
The administration has actually made a report, and this week accepted that report on the 26th of July. Sorry. And that, in essence, this motion is making it equal for everybody rather than having an ad hoc manner. I know that Councillor Hull over there several years ago, you know, utilised $2,000 for an issue with the Ombudsman. The policy has been reviewed by governance. And in terms of, there's a limit on it for $2,000 a year. It's not related to personal matters outside elected members' role. And it also gives us safeguards because any tapping into this thing has to go through the CEO or the Mayor. So I commend this motion to members.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Blescu? Councillor Blescu is seconded. Let's see his contribution.
that you wish.
You got the call, mate. Do you want to second it or not? You weren't seconding it? Okay, would someone like to second the motion? Councillor Telfer. Should speak.
I'll second it because I think if it's needed, we have it there. Hopefully it's not needed, so we're not wasting resources for the sake of wasting them, but we have a catch-all there that can be used.
And I suppose if it is used, it would it be recorded, can I ask Ms McKenzie, would it be recorded on the elected members' gifts and benefits register?
Through the chair, yes it would be, and that is outlined within the process, within the policy.
Thought so, thank you. Councillor Hull.
Just a question about the motion. It talks about the following. It talks about the following changes. Is that right? Yeah.
Well, that is the motion.
Following amendments.
Finishes after
the word. Okay. Alright, so I wasn't sure, sorry.
I just want to know if we want to find out more information about a matter that we're dealing with, and we don't, is there the option to actually get advice on that without this process? So if we think that a legal opinion is needed for a matter that we're dealing with, is that something that we can get, or do we need to apply, and will that limit how much advice we can get? I just wanted some clarity on that.
Ms McKenzie?
Yeah, through the chair. No, it won't limit your options to liaise direct with staff in relation to a matter. For example, if you had a conflict of interest and you wanted staff to source that advice on your behalf, then we're more than happy to work with members in that space as well.
What would be the line that would be crossed if we're where it should really go into this as opposed to some of the everyday stuff?
I guess some of the matters that might be, if it was a matter that, for example, came under some of the ICAC legislation, something that was a matter potentially to do with staff and you wanted to seek some direct legal advice and you didn't want staff involved in that, that may be something that you liaised directly with the mayor or the CEO on. So I guess it's something that's generally confidential in nature and to do with the elected member rather than something that's, I guess, normal business within a council meeting.
Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just along the same lines, I'm a little bit confused then, given that on page 160, 4.2 says individual conflict of interest will be in accordance with this policy, and 4.5 says criminal matters, and code of conduct, which is further down at 4.6. So I just wanted to check that, because I think that might be a little bit inconsistent there if we're saying conflict of interest. Yeah.
What it does is it allows members to seek that advice directly themselves if they wish to. So you can still come to staff, or if you didn't want to come through staff, the policy allows you to obtain that directly without speaking to staff to obtain it. In regards to criminal matters, I guess the assertion is there that it would be outside your role of an elected member if there were some criminal allegations against you. And in addition to the code of conduct, it suggested that if a code of conduct was brought against an elected member, then that should be a matter that the elected member should be dealing with directly. You'll see that there is the catchphrase in there at the end of it saying that if the code of conduct is unsubstantiated, then council can consider reimbursement for those legal costs.
Now, I think it's significant too, in the introduction, it says generally seeking legal advice would be facilitated by the Chief Executive Officer or their delegates in the course of their administrative role. In other words, that means that the current situation would keep on going, so that we might go to Ms McKenzie and say, have I got a conflict of interest in these circumstances? She might go to a lawyer and get some legal advice and say, well, yes, there is. But you might think, well, actually, I really don't think it should be. I don't think that legal advice is right. I'll apply to use some of my money to get a separate opinion on these circumstances. Is that a realistic sort of scenario, Ms. McKenzie?
Yes, I think so.
Councillor Hutchinson?
Just another question. Is it applied retrospectively, the policy?
Policies aren't generally retrospective. They're at the time that they've been adopted.
So in the example that Mayor Hannah's just outlined, could a member, for example, go back and say, oh, actually, remember this matter that I had last year? How about I get some secondary advice on that?
Seems to me that in getting approval for the money to be spent, one would have to see that there's some positive benefit that the advice is going to take the matter forward somewhat. If it's purely historical, I wouldn't see the point of the advice in a sense. But Ms. McKenzie, what do you think?
I would suggest that the policy would be applied from the date of adoption rather than being considered retrospectively unless council resolved otherwise.
Okay. Any more? And I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried by majority. So now we go to page 163 of the agenda, the Council Annual Performance and Effectiveness Review, basically a survey for us to do. Over to you.
Well, we discussed this at People and Culture, and we think it's a reasonable venture for the council to consider. It's actually a fairly comprehensive appraisal of how we're performing.
Yes, I mean, certainly plenty of questions there, but especially as a first go. It's a pretty comprehensive review of the things that might be relevant to our governance and duties and so on. Is that seconded? Councillor Telfer, thank you. Any comments or questions? All those in favour, raise your hand. Oh, sorry, there was a question before I take the vote. Councillor Blescu.
I guess also, like, some of the evaluation I think we need to consider is what we bring into the table as council. So if we don't really get anything from this, any comments that outline that, I think we need to be able to provide that as well. So, are we going through things in a methodical, strategic manner? What do we want to achieve and how, how are we, what are the barriers to that, sort of from ourselves as councillors, but also, is there something that could be improved as far as the information that's provided to us? I just really think some of that sort of big picture stuff, because we might sort of be chasing the nuts and bolts of it, but actually the structure of it we may not be looking into enough. So, but that's all my comment.
Two comments I'd make. One is that there is ample opportunity for comment, isn't there, as well as the actual numbers. And secondly, at a forum at some stage, as members know, I'm very keen to have a discussion amongst us about a whole range of issues in terms of the way we do our business, whether it be emails, council meetings, etc., etc. I continue to aspire that we'll make time for that. That's where we can have that sort of discussion, a truly strategic discussion that Councillor Valesky is referring to. Any other... Councillor Telfer?
Survey to Appendix 1 rather than it says subject to other things which we haven't got.
In truth, that was the motion. I think it was understood as such, full stop after Appendix 1. It's really, that's just a textual correction which has been attended to, so no need to seek leave. Any other questions or comments? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? That is carried unanimously. So we go across to page 170, the Chief Executive Officer Performance Review, recommendation of a consultant to develop and facilitate the review. I can say that this has been through the People and Culture Committee. We sifted through a number of names, considered it very carefully. That's why there's just one name put before you. We're getting very good value because of an insistence at a fairly low, a relatively good value remuneration for the project. Councillor Hutchinson moved. Is that seconded? Go on, Councillor Crossland. Any questions or comments? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that is carried by majority. Thank you. Now, our key performance indicators for 2016-17. I'll just make the comment, something I've raised with staff during the week. There's been a debate about the extent to which some of these things should be confidential or otherwise. To his credit, Mr. Scull's view is that there's no reason why the KPIs themselves shouldn't be in the open. My view, and I think that the view of a number of us, is that when it comes to the analysis, there are really sound reasons for keeping that confidential from first to last while a person's still in employment, as is the case for all of the other employees of the City of Marion. But that's why this is out in the open. Here are the KPIs in the public domain, so everyone can have a look. Councillor Telfer? Yes.
And that was a mechanism while we were working out what we were doing. Can I suggest that when we move this forward that we take those out? They were a process thing.
That's completely true. So if the adoption could be, I suppose, without that column, I mean, that's, again, probably textual thing. We can maintain the same resolution because we're adopting the indicators, not this table as such. So I think we staff can simply take that on board for when it's republished. Is that seconded? Oh, sorry, were you moving, Councillor Telfer? Yeah, thank you. Is that seconded, Councillor Crossland? Any other questions or comment? Councillor Gard.
Just in respect to capital works and works, where does the routine capital works, such as, you know, the normal work program and infrastructure work, come into context there? Is it part of the second bracket, respect of each major capital work, or does it have its own?
No, Councillor Gard, I mean, major capital works are defined as being of value $4 million and above. So really, you've got the first couple of KPIs that would be relevant to your concern just there. One is delivery of the budget, delivery of the entire program within budget. And secondly, the second one, the agreed projects identified in the annual business plan and the first year targets in the 3-year plan. So that includes a number of capital works. So you've got some measure of the CEO's performance in relation to those specified capital works. It's certainly not all of them. You know. All right. Councillor Blesku.
I guess, first of all, I'd like to say that sort of having all this so up front is pretty new. Normally it was done, it was done as an individual agreement. It was quite private. I take it the CEO is obviously okay with it all being out there. and I think that that's a positive thing. I guess my question is this sort of too, is it a hard ask? Like, are we sort of potentially setting the CEO up to fail for things outside of their control with these KPIs? And I think the things outside of the control. So that's my question.
It's a good question, because the art of writing good KPIs is setting high but achievable targets. And that is very much the intention here. There shouldn't be anything there that's impossible. And I'd suggest that is the case, but that is a matter of the judgment of counsel. I should indicate that Mr. Skull has said to me that these KPIs are acceptable, so he would have no doubt made objection if he thought something was just impossible to achieve.
So I guess, though, if the situation changes outside of the... Like, and I'll preface this by saying I don't think the CEO is someone who would make excuses for blame other people and take responsibility. He would take responsibility for what he has to do. However, if there are things that happen later on that are outside of the control of the CEO, outside of the control of council even, do we have the option to revisit some of these KPIs?
The KPIs, it's important to bear in mind, are not absolutely mandatory steps that must be taken. It's not like the tests in the Ninja Warrior show where you have to pass absolutely every test and there's no... it's an absolute fail if you don't pass every one. It's a guide to the chief executive about what they need to achieve, and it's a guide for us in assessing the chief executive about what has been achieved, so that everyone's clear about what the intention of council is. But it's not to be, I think everyone understands, it's not to be applied in a hard and fast rule. So you don't get sacked if something doesn't quite make it, especially if there are factors beyond the chief executive's control. So, for example, when they were digging a drain down at Hallett Cove and, you know, there were some technical problems with the rock and, you know, it had to be put off for quite some time, and that's, the mayor's been speaking for too long, I'm afraid. But in those circumstances, no one's going to hold it against the chief executive. So that's not how these would be treated in practice. Yes, but please keep going, Councillor Bleskin.
Yeah, look, as I said, I think it's a positive thing that we're doing this. I would like to have us to bear in mind that if there are things outside of the control of the CEO, that we actually take that account into the weighting, and that's not put on there, because this is a public document, and if the CEO, you know, this grade will probably be out there. So I don't think that's fair on a staff member, however optimistic and capable they may be, that we mark them in the public eye for things that they are not able to control.
Councillor Lescu, you could move an amendment if you felt strongly enough about that.
Anything that we could do later on if the situation arises?
Yes. In all honesty, I'm very confident that it won't become a problem, because I think it's well understood around the room that that something that's beyond the control of the person would not be held against them. And I believe, I'll ask Mr. Lyons to comment as Acting Chief Executive, whether that would be the same for any employee of the City of Marion.
Your Worship, that's a fair comment, and certainly in my capacity as the Acting CEO, if someone came and had something that was beyond their capacity or beyond their scope of influence, then it would be impossible to hold that person responsible for that position. I think I know that Adrian has reviewed these, and I understand, although I can't speak for him tonight, but I understand he's okay with these KPIs.
Okay, well, If there are no more questions or comments, all those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that is carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we're on to Councillor Gard's motion on page 180 of the agenda.
Your Worship, can I just declare there is a conflict of interest for me on that one. I didn't realise before, but point three refers to my employer, so I will be leaving the meeting.
That's understood. Do we need any more detail, Ms McKenzie? No, understood. Thank you, Councillor Crossland. Councillor Gard, over to you.
Yes, this is one that I'm very passionate about, and I know that my colleagues from the local ward are querying why I should put this one up.
Councillor Garden, sorry, just as you're getting into your stride,
yep.
I'm just going to test the meeting whether the motion is seconded, Councillor Hull, so I'll come back to Councillor Hull. Please carry on, Councillor Garden.
I've been a user of that crossing for, not directly, but in the back seat, for 63 years, and my family residence is still down on Diagonal Road. But let me tell you, it was only really the first 10 years of that 63 years that was fairly good going. And from then it got too hard. And I remember in 1973 when I had one of my first jobs in the travel agency at the original Westfield, or not, wasn't Westfield then, the Marion Shopping Centre. Even in 1973, I used to think twice about being on the wrong side of that crossing in getting to work or from work. So it is something that is extremely passionate to me. I am very encouraged by the funding indications of the now government. I'm a little discouraged, but not entirely, by the response of the state government, particularly in view of the fact that they see things as rail down North Terrace as higher priority. I think most people would not see that, even those that stand to benefit most, if they really knew the case for the Oaklands Crossing. The third part of the motion is involving what we should do if there is a delay, and we're going to have a delay in any case, even if things go well, before the problem actually goes away. And I do believe there are some logistical things, including police intervention, and unfortunately Councillor Crossland has to make himself absent because I've mentioned that in the motion, but I do strongly believe that there are some commonsensical things that have gone missing for many decades in that area. And if you just examine the situation, as I have on many occasions as a motorist and as a passerby on foot, the sort of things that happen in the traffic, the debacles around that crossing, are quite avoidable if indeed some band-aid measures were put into place. So I commend the motion, all three parts, to all members, and make the point that we saw fit in speaking with management to bring the meeting that I've aired there, the forum, forward, so that there is provision to build a final case prior to the state budget going into place next year.
Councillor Gard, I have a couple of questions before I go to a seconder. One was, you were actually just answering that at the end there, because with the election in, the state election in March 2018, that was the original intention, I believe, in talking about a forum in September 2017 leading up to the state election. So I was wondering why you wanted to move that forum to a less effective time.
Sorry, I'll qualify that a little better. The Treasurer, Koutsantanis, has indicated fairly succinctly that there could well be room for this project to be funded in the next financial year's budget from this year. So I think it would be prudent to get our act together before that time, simply because I think the iron is hot, but we've just got to make it that much hotter.
Yes, certainly if it's going to be in the state budget, which normally hits around May or June, that decision will probably be taken at the end of this year or early next year. But anyway, be that as it may, the other questions I had were, you talk about writing to, or the Mayor requesting the Department of Transport to immediately implement interim measures. Do you have any suggestions whatsoever about what they might be?
Well, I mentioned police intervention, but I believe road markings and a certain amount of road engineering could help the cause. The way the traffic moves from Dunrobin Road into Diagonal Road and from Pruner Street into Diagonal Road and from Diagonal Road into Pruner Street is a real bugbear. And the traffic amount is going to, the volume is going to increase, I believe, significantly as the South Road works progress over the next few years. And I'm not talking just about the Darlington works, but future works beyond Darlington. And also we have a steadily increasing population around this area and an expanding Westfield Marion. So there's a lot of issues coming into bear.
Well, the final question I had was, if you're asking that the Mayor request for SA Police intervention, again, I have no idea what you think they might do. Do you have some suggestions in that regard? What offences are being committed that would help flow of traffic through the intersection if they were stopped?
Well, I think probably Dunrobin Road, and perhaps Councillor Howell can second me on this. The Dunrobin Road intersection is a dangerous one because traffic tends to take one side of Diagonal Road at a time as it enters the T-junction, and buses are trying to negotiate that as well because Dunrobin Road is a bus route. And the Prunus Street traffic at bad times, if you can imagine the turn right opposite the Warradale Hotel, there's and you're travelling north, the lanes fill up if you want to either turn into Coles or then a little later turn into Prunus Street, and that then blocks another lane of Diagonal Road, and police direction at that intersection where people have to do a right-hand turn across the southbound Diagonal Road traffic would be very helpful. And I'm only talking about peak periods, and I'm only suggesting those two intersections at this point. I believe everything else is manageable, but those two areas really compound the overall hazards.
Yes, you're probably right that police will be able to impose fines on a number of motorists for illegal turns in peak hour around that intersection, and just hope they don't say that Marion Council sent them to do it.
Yeah.
Seconded by Councillor Hull. So would you like to speak now, Councillor Hull?
Mr Mayor, I welcome the motion. Councillor Pryor and myself did visit Councillor Gard. we're not going to be offended by an elected member that maybe lives in the more leafy, sought-after part of Marion. He's onto something here, and we all have to travel through that intersection from time to time, and there's never a good side to be on of the crossing. I'm not going to get into semantics about who we should involve. Councillor Gard's made some good points. There may be some suggestion that the timing of this could come forward a little bit, but I'll wait for that suggestion. I would give that due consideration as well, and maybe the mover might want to consider just changing that to late January in 2017. But that would have to be with the leave of the meeting, apparently, Councillor Appleby. But that's the only change I would make to it. Look, we have done well. When we say we, I include the administration in this, and PR people. They've done a great job to extract what we did out of the federal election. There's indications now from Treasurer Koutsantonis that there might be some spot for it in the next budget, particularly if the federal government got elected, the Liberal government did get elected, so here we are. Point in question, that we should now be not allowing that commitment by the member for Boothby to slip by and to actually put the pressure on the state government to actually acknowledge it, even though they suggest it's a paltry amount, but it's a start, an absolutely big start to getting this corrected. I don't have to go into detail about explaining the worth of our endeavours with this. We all know that and how overdue it is. If you go into state, this sort of infrastructure would have been dealt with a long time ago. Melbourne, Sydney, for example. So I'm actually urging you members to support this, to keep the pressure on, to not allow politicians to forget their commitments and their sometimes flippant comments about support. I think we just should keep the momentum going with this. It's a small financial contribution, and I urge you to support it.
Councillor Hull, if you're looking for a word to describe Merino and you don't want to use biophilic, maybe super aquatic or aquaescient? Is anyone speaking against the motion? A question from Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Your Worship. Looking for some guidance in terms of the state budget, would you believe the late January timing would be more appropriate?
It probably would be. They start discussions, almost now, but certainly towards the end of this year, the budget submissions are being put together. So if you really wanted to influence the budget decisions, then March is March 2017. It's probably fairly late down the track.
Yeah, that's my thinking as well. So you think even late January would be fairly late as well? It's getting close, well, I know. But
bearing in mind that you need to pretty well avoid mid-December to mid-January. Well, Councillor Hutchinson, still moving his lips.
My question is, if we put by the end of March, then, or whatever the date is there, then if it's deemed by staff that strategically we need to go in earlier, we can.
So the mover is seeking leave to amend or to move accordingly.
Yes, if I may just comment.
No, you can't. That's with leave of the seconder as well. Do I have the leave of the meeting? Yes, I do. So with leave, that motion is by the to before the end of March 2017. So from September 2017 to before the end of March 2017. It's not an amendment. It's actually a change to the variation of the original motion. So thank you. Very well. Any more questions? Councillor Hutchinson.
I'll move an amendment to split off 1 and 2 to be dealt with separately? The intention is to remove point 3 to effectively offer 1 and 2. I think those things can be managed at a ward briefing level.
Yeah, just quickly, look, I really encourage the support from Councillor Gard. I worry that the third part of the motion, the part that we've deleted, is a little bit wishy-washy. And your question's indicated the same, that what are we going to get the police to do? What are we going to get DIPTI to do? DIPTI, in particular, are very acutely aware of this intersection. They, if they have measures that they haven't implemented, one might question why. So I think that they've probably thrown the kitchen sink at it, and they probably don't have much left in the tank to try. So I don't think the third point adds much to the motion, but I certainly agree with the first two points of trying to get this into the state budget. I think it's important. I think it's an earlier opportunity than we first thought at getting this on the way. So I guess that's a good thing.
Right. Councillor Appleby, are you happy if we vote on the amendment immediately? If it's not already too late, then I ask you to vote on the amendment. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. Then the motion is carried by, the amendment rather, is carried by majority. Now, anyone who hasn't spoken to the motion still has an opportunity to speak to the motion as amended. Councillor Valescu?
So part 3 will be moved separately?
No.
Or has it been taken out?
No, it's been taken out.
Oh.
Yes.
You're actually up and down.
Take that as rhetorical. Any other questions?
Take it as a comment.
Then I'll put the motion as amended, which is the clauses 1 and 2 you see on the screen. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, it's carried by majority. Thank you. Well done, Councillor Gard. And you have another one on page 182 of the agenda. Councillor Gard. Advise Councillor Crossland that his conflict is over.
Yes, I alluded to this point, Your Worship, in the previous motion, and that is that we are facing many years of infrastructural works between Darlington and Anzac Highway. I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that as soon as the Darlington project is completed, estimated end of 2018, that of the Torrens to Torrens end of 2018, and then the connector road that's about to start to be built to go up to the Northern Expressway end of 2019, I would expect the final stages of the North-South Corridor to start to come into place and funding well before that, taking us to probably around 2023 or 2026 in that range before we see some form of nearing completion, let's say. In the meantime, there is the potential for absolute mayhem in the city of Marion. In this set of comments, I haven't included the fact that we are under a mandate to expand the number of residences in the city of Marion by some 13,000 by 2030. So a good part of that will need to have happened by 2026. We're probably looking at a population increase of some 25 to 30%, I would estimate, from that by the late 20s. So there are many, many reasons why there should be some really hard-nosed contingency planning going on as to how traffic is going to be managed in the city of Marion, and that is very reliant upon the insights and planning of DIPTE. I think we need to be far more assured by DIPTE that they are doing that work, that they are calculating what sort of loads our main thoroughfares are going to take over the next 2 to 3 years, particularly with Darlington, but then beyond that as the St Mary's to Anzac Highway section takes its work. So it's a matter of taking stock, checking that DIPTE is doing its work. I doubt very much that it is. Even though the comments of our manager, Mark Griffin, suggest that there is good cohesion between us and DIPTE, I would like to see a lot more information coming back than his comments in that regard. So, to me, it's common sense. It's a huge investment that we're talking about. If it's not managed correctly over the next 5 years, the planning that is, and the assessment, then we are really in for a misery in the following 5 years. So, again, I commend this motion wholeheartedly. I think it's all common sense.
Is that seconded? Seconded, Councillor Kerry. Any comment? Comment, Councillor Hull?
In the previous council, we had the event of the duplication of the Southern Expressway. Councillor Spears, now the member for Bright, was hot on this, and I hope, as an MP, continues to be. The Southern Expressway, as we know it through the city of Marion, I call it the Marion Bypass, because in the south you can't get on it or off it. The first port of call is Bedford Park. The second point of call is the city of Onkaparinga. And really, there should be something in this motion to address that. It's all very well to have the infrastructure councillor guard go through our city and create that faster moving passage of transport. That's fine, but if you can't get on or off it, that's an issue. And once again, interstate, Mr. Mayor, travel along the freeway in Sydney and see how many access and egress points there are for all those suburban roads to actually get on and off. We don't have the benefit of that with our freeway through our southern part of the city. So just thought I'd make that point, Mr. Mayor.
Sure. Well, I mean, the point of the motion is fact-finding, essentially, to start with. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried by majority. Thank you. And now we come to the confidential reports. First of all, regarding Signatures Cafe. Do I have someone... I suppose we do need to do it confidentially. So moving, go into confidence, Councillor Valescu, and seconded, Councillor Crossland. All those in favour, all those against, that's carried unanimously. So we say farewell to Michelle Etheridge, who is coming on board as our messenger journalist, and not only journalist, but actually the editor of the Messenger at the same time. She has two roles, so we're very fortunate to have her
on board.
So in terms of the information that LGA provided recently, they did raise the fact that LGA nominees or members of City of Marion on boards in which they have a right to put a nomination through may be subject to the unappointment. Subsequent to that, I've sought advice from the administration on that. And it's deemed that on the face of it there is no material conflict on the face of it as it stands. However, because it relates to this financial year and the potential for my role on the Local Government Grants Commission to be reappointed in this financial year, I believe that I do have a material conflict of interest now because it is in this financial year, and therefore I am declaring conflict and leaving. Yeah, just a summary to say that I explained the